welcome to Open Source's Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz over here on the controls.
Nice to have you back.
It's great to be here, Adam. Thanks very much. 5 o'clock in the PM.
Yeah, it's drive time!
Woo! Anyway.
Sound effects optional. There we go. Yeah.
Open Source, this is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today we will be talking about First Nations issues, including some startling news out of British Columbia that civil servants in the Ministry of Transportation triple-deleted emails pertaining to meetings about Highway 16, also known as the Highway of Tears, and this was after those records were requested by the opposition NDP. Then we will look at the other election currently going on, or still going on, that's in the United States, and the presidential race there continues with new moves in the Republican field and another debate, some big moves in the Democratic camp, and then there is also a new begrudging Speaker of the House in the House of Representatives, and we'll discuss all that. And then finally, we'll consider Halloween. A local pastor is making the case that the holiday is getting too gruesome, and we will test his assertion to see if maybe there's any merit to that argument.
Our scariest show ever.
Yeah, I need
to. We're off to a good start.
Yeah.
But first, it's another big hit to the confidence of First Nations people in Canada's institutions, because last week there was a Radio Canada investigation of what can only be described as a culture of assault, both physical and sexual, in the town of Val-d'Or by the provincial police there and committed against local Aboriginal women. And in case you... you didn't hear too much about it or didn't hear anything about it. Basically, there was allegations that police officers, provincial police officers, the Sûreté du Québec, were picking up Aboriginal women, assaulting them, driving them out to the boonies, dropping them off, and making them basically walk home after assaulting them. So far, 8 police officers have been suspended. There was a 9th through whom allegations were made, but he has since passed away. But, I mean, these allegations, Scotty, go back to 2001.
Well, and that's the thing. And allegations such as these have been made right across the country over many, many years. If you think back to, it's at least 20 years ago when there was a situation where Aboriginal men would be being driven to the outskirts of Saskatoon for what they had called the Moonlight Drive and just left to walk home. And several, at least 3 that I know off the top of my head, died. And, of course, there was an investigation into that. But here we have something similar happening again with the added degree of alleged assault and all kinds of stuff going on. And there's also a connection to what will be our second story that I wanted to mention because there's a bit of a crossover in that on the Highway of Tears in BC, which we're also going to talk about in a bit. There was allegations a couple of years ago of the RCMP doing the same thing. Threats, torture, sexual assault, tasing women, pepper spraying them. So it's not as if this is unique to Val-d'Or and the Sûreté du Québec, because Sûreté du Québec have a reputation. There's an excellent article that Neil MacDonald wrote on CBC as he covered the Oka crisis in 1990. And he said, you know, he's not even Aboriginal. He's afraid of them, especially from what he saw then and their attitudes towards the people in Oka and that situation, which is a whole story unto itself. But, you know, the language and the attitude and let's get the savages, that kind of stuff. He said he was shocked then, has never seen anything like it. And, of course, the attitude, it seems pervasive. Now, I know that the police force themselves, I think they pretty much just didn't even phone it in on the weekend. They just didn't show up.
Yeah, because they're blue flu.
Yeah. None of them went to work in protest, I guess, of everybody getting tarred with this brush. But it's not a very big – Val-d'Or isn't a big city. It's only something like 33,000. So it's the kind of place – well, obviously a third the size of Guelph, but it is the kind of place where you would probably know a lot of the people and know a lot of the police. So that's their way of dealing with it. Not a good idea, I don't think. It doesn't doesn't bode well for them to do that.
Yeah, and a bit reflexive of what we've seen happen south of the border in terms of Black Lives Matter and those protests. And what we see there is police closing ranks, even if the officer is blatantly in the wrong and caught on tape being blatantly in the wrong at that. But the wagons are circled. And you know, all I can think about is the people of this community. It's like, what are you to think when, you know, you have nine officers who are accused of these horrible things, and the people who are supposed to come out on the side of the victims immediately come out on the side of the alleged perpetrators. And it makes it all the more harder. And, you know, you're talking about stories of the provincial police in Quebec. And there are a lot of women who are in shelters in Montreal and in the bigger cities south, in southern Quebec, who, you know, had to escape. Like, that's just the word to use, escape from their homes in northern Quebec to get away from the abuse. And then hearing it all drudged up again on Radio Canada and then through the other various media outlets that picked it up is kind of startling for them.
Yeah, and so one of the repercussions of this is that the chiefs in the area, the majority of them and their delegates, have had a meeting in Val-d'Or to kind of discuss what's next. And it was initiated by the Assembly of First Nations of Quebec and Labrador, and the head chief, Chief Picard, said that you know, this is typical of the systemic discrimination that they've been experiencing since probably day one, since settlers settled. I see it that way, too, in terms of this kind of colonial attitude, this holdover from we need to civilize savages. And, of course, then there's this whole by any means necessary kind of thing. And then those are the kinds of it's a holdover from really, really, well, let's call them ancient or old fashioned attitudes of that kind of. You know, the settler mindset. And this is what we see, that it's still there. And it's pervasive. I mean, if it's this many people, eight officers, as you said, suspended and one's passed on, but I mean, that doesn't matter.
No. And, you know, it's pervasive. And I think because there's still a kind of Wild West atmosphere up there because civilization is few and far between. I mean, we're talking about a community, like you said, of 30,000 people. That's huge. In northern parts of this country, that's a huge community.
Oh, and it is. I mean, civilization is there. It's just that there is this sort of let's call it the wilderness aspect, because it's a resource town. And resource towns are sort of frontier towns. But I mean, this isn't the you know, it's not like When Calls the Heart, which has no Aboriginal people in it and has no Black people in it. That's people's impression, maybe possibly, in the South of you know, situations like that. I've been to different resource towns in North Ontario and that, and you know, and I realize it's not 1910 anymore either, but you know, there is that kind of, there is one or two industries either generally in a place like Abitibi, where Val-d'Or is, it's, well, Val-d'Or means the Valley of Gold. So it started at a gold mine, pulp and paper. Abitibi was a paper company. So there is that kind of frontier aspect to it where there's a town and then there's sort of like the rural outskirts. And of course, with that comes a certain sense of isolation as well. And I think that's where we see these kinds of attitudes. I mean, it does happen right across the country, no doubt about it. And, you know, not to tar everybody the same brush, but that it's sort of a, you know, not expected of that area, but it's just that it always seems to be this type of place where these stories come out of.
Yeah, and to turn this on into another direction, you have the Quebec government. I mean, the chiefs were understandably livid about the revelation of this and the need to take immediate action. And then you have Lise Thorault, who is the public safety minister in Quebec, who came out and, you know, was in tears at this press conference to talk about what the Quebec government response was going to be.
Shaken up, for sure.
Clearly she was shaken up, not to blame her, but I mean, it's not her immediate culture that's, you know, sort of been affected by this. But at the same time, it was announced today she's taking a leave of absence in the midst of all this. This is her portfolio, but she is taking a leave of absence for quote unquote health reasons. And the municipalities minister is Pierre Moreau is going to be stepping up. But still, this is not I'm not sure what to, how to take it as any kind of sign, but you know, when you have the Minister of Public Safety being this overwhelmed and this flabbergasted about it, either it, you know, she's a truly sensitive person to whom this is a personally affecting thing, which I would understand, or she was just so completely blindsided by the news of this. And this is, again, this is her portfolio, and why was she so completely caught unawares about this? Why is there this pervasive culture of silence in Quebec?
It sounds like there's certain pressures coming from the departments as well, in that I'm not sure who the comment was. I think it may have come from directly from somebody in the police force saying that they didn't like the minister's lack of emotional control.
Hmm.
But I mean, that, and on the other side of that, there's a lot of people that would sort of respect that in terms of like this woman is really, you know, is feeling what is going on in terms of like, how could this possibly happen? You know, as a woman, not necessarily, you know, not as an Aboriginal woman, an Indigenous person as well.
Right.
But, I mean, it would be shattering if you had no idea that this was going on, and then within something that's under your purview is just, you know, I can see her being in shock for sure. And, you know, there could be other things going on in her life too. We don't know that. But, yeah, to see that, it was just that 2-minute clip, and I was like, my goodness, she really – now, will the person stepping in fix things right away? I don't think so. It's not going to happen overnight.
Well,
but that's what they need.
That's a lot to put on Pierre Moreau to say, hey, Pierre Moreau, fix this.
But they do need somebody to get in and play the heavy and say, look,
yeah, and
they have, figure this out. I mean, one of the main problems is that they investigate themselves.
Yeah, and they have the Montreal police with independent observers looking into it now. And then Philippe Couillard is meeting with the Chiefs next week, the Quebec premier. You know, it still seems like kind of a poor response. And maybe it's because we're kind of in flux right now with a lot of people watching the federal government, the incoming prime minister having promised to call this inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women. And perhaps people are waiting for that to take place, for that to take the lead. I'm not sure, but I'm not sure. At the same time, it feels a bit more urgent than, yeah, we'll meet like two, three weeks after this, you know, comes out. And
well, from the sounds of it, from the meeting of the chiefs in the area, that they want an inquiry or an investigation.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely want an investigation specific to this. Now, whether anything that comes of that will be, you know, kind of rolled into the greater commission of inquiry, it probably should be.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely needs to be, you know, in that and we have tears and what, like, just all incorporated into, like, what's going on. Kind of along the lines of the residential school investigation. It's like they have to get deep into this, drill down deep and say, what exactly is happening here? Because you hear stories about that however many years ago, like in the residential schools, mm-hmm. that when the last one closed, 1990. But to have this, you know, ongoing is just incredible in this day and age. And of course, they need to fix it.
Yeah. And again, it is a huge problem. And but there is a call amongst the Aboriginal community in this country. They came out in droves this last federal election, being driven in large part by their issues being ignored, and the message finally coming across, like, hey, we want our issues to be heard. We have to actually stand up and say, hey, let our issues be heard. Voter turnout went up 270%, which is incredible.
And they ran out of ballots in places, from what I heard. It was like, so
yeah.
That they were,
oh, yeah.
Such an unexpected turnout. I should mention, just before we go on, that we had put a call out to a couple of people in the Indigenous community, but you know, with scheduling and stuff, we weren't able to get somebody on. So I just wanted to mention that. But if you're out there, want to give us a call. Not for today, but for the future. Our normal point people were unavailable, but I just wanted to mention that. So rather
yeah.
than just have the two normal dudes sitting talking about the,
yeah.
We did plan to have guests today,
yeah.
but it didn't happen.
It's yeah. Sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah, but that's okay.
And to confirm, yes, we are white.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is, you know, not quite old stock, but definitely settler stock.
Settler stock.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've injected a bit of levity, we will move on to more sad issues. And as Scotty was alluding to, with the Highway of Tears, there has been an inquiry into the Highway of Tears and Highway 16. And the matter of missing and murdered Aboriginal women along that route that runs north-south along the coast of BC. That was about 3 years ago that report came back, and there have been a number of discussions since in terms of how to address some of the some of the suggestions outlined in it, including several meetings that the Ministry of Transportation, bureaucrats in the Ministry of Transportation, had with communities up and down the BC coast, and some emails traded back and forth. Last fall, the NDP opposition in BC, the provincial NDP, wanted to see those emails. The request went out. And it turns out they were triple deleted by someone in the Ministry of Transportation. If you're wondering about triple delete, and you know, if that's to click on something and delete it three times, no. It just means there's, you know, emails exist in several different places on different servers, and it was deleted from the three main servers they think the email was on. So it's entirely possible these emails will be recovered at some point. 36 pages of emails, by the way. They will be recovered. They may be on some stray server somewhere. It just means when they say triple delete, it just means to suggest that a lot of effort was gone into to try and delete this. And Elizabeth Denham, who's the Information and Privacy Commissioner of BC, has called on the RCMP to investigate. And indeed, she was not kind with the British Columbia government's capacity for, let's say, sharing information.
Yeah, and it sounds like the original whistleblower, a guy by the name of Tim Duncan, he was the one that brought this to light and said that he was calling up some records. Now, there seems to be two types of records. There's transitory, which need to be kept, and non-transitory. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, the transitory ones are the ones that are just kind of like a rough draft or something that needs to be kind of expunged just to save space. You don't have to worry about space as much anymore. I think they might be working on an old model on that. We need to delete things to make space for other things. But space is pretty much unlimited now when it comes to computers, right? So they may be working on an old model. Right. But he had said that, you know, he had called up the records, somebody came out. He's like, no, you have to delete those. Just delete those.
Yeah.
Which kind of smacks, to me at least, there's a bit of a cover-up going on. Because this is the Ministry of Transportation. It's not, they are a legal body, but they're not, you know, it's not the law. It's not like the police are deleting the emails or, you know, detectives or the government themselves. This is a branch, the transportation branch. So what have they got to hide, or what do they know, or what do they don't know? It seems like what is to be gained by doing this other than maybe... you know, the political adversaries of the people on the other side of the bench not getting the information because it happens to be the NDP. Perhaps if it was a third party or whatever, this wouldn't happen. But it sounds, you know, a lot of effort was put into this. And it sounds like they work on the same kind of model in that they just kind of self-monitor themselves, like the police in Val-d'Or or whatever. Right. They're just kind of like, the complainant said that it was kind of like they kind of write their own tickets, like, oops, my bad. But, you know, if it's gone, it's gone. Triple deleted is pretty certain. Sure, you need, like, the real eggheads in to get that back.
Yeah. And it's not just a Ministry of Transportation thing either, because Elizabeth Denham said that they neglected to search for records. This was across the government. There was a neglection. They neglected to search for records. There was a failure to keep email records or keep good email records, a failure to document searches. So if someone said, hey, can you find all these papers on matter X, they just go, oh, no, there's nothing there, and that's that, and you just have to take their word for it. And then there was also willful destruction of records for a freedom of information, for the freedom of information search. That's not what we call it in Canada, but
it's access to information.
Yeah,
something like that.
That's right. That there was willful destruction of these records that people were asking for, no matter what their political stripe were. This is the nature of government. This goes to the nature to very fundamental ideas of an open government, regardless of, you know, whether it pertains to an issue as sad and pertinent as the Highway of Tears. The government is supposed to keep records of their communications and the things they do, so that when something goes wrong, we have a paper trail to follow and find out why something went wrong.
Well, wasn't part of it too that one of the staffers had lied under oath? He said, "Oh no, we don't do that." And then it turned out that's exactly what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I mean, red flags all over the place. So I don't know. I mean, I've said cover up already, but it just seems so like what do you have to hide? You're the Ministry of Transportation, and it sounds like the whistleblower too. Tim, he was demoted. Or he saw it as a demotion. He was kind of sent to work somewhere else, like to just do paperwork in an office somewhere for the Liberals. So he saw he was just kind of getting shuffled to the side.
It wasn't a demotion, but it was demotion-ish.
Yeah. I guess you're not doing the job that he was signed up for. I should just mention, too, because I'm not sure. There are people out there who might not be familiar with the Highway of Tears, and I didn't realize that the scope of it was so wide and that there's the highway that we were talking about goes from Prince George to Prince Rupert. Is that right? That's the main stretch of it, which kind of runs parallel. There's Highway 1, which is the famous Trans-Canada, and then there's the 16 is not – it's also Trans-Canada, but it's the northern branch that goes through northern cities like Edmonton and Saskatoon, sort of like the upper spine of the two roads. And there was 19 women murdered from 1969 on, but they figure that it's more. And this goes right into the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Inquiry. Mm-hmm. There's a link there, too, in that the majority of women, and because this is an isolated area and hitchhiking is common,
right?
There's a link to that as well. So, and the cutoff has been 2011, but there was somebody charged with a murder or a couple of the murders, but what had happened was this person went to jail and then murders were still happening within that stretch of road. So there still hasn't been a resolution on this. They figure it could be upwards of 40 or 50 that they know of.
Well, there has been some solved cases, and they were able to track one from, I think it was from the 70s. They were able to do DNA tests on it and found it linked to a serial rapist. And, you know, every now and then you get one, but, I mean, it's still a big, open, unsolved book in a lot of these cases. And, I mean, and you know, we're talking about, you know, what does the Ministry of Transportation have to hide? Well, a lot of people bring up that it's actually a Ministry of Transportation issue in terms of this is an area that they can assist in, because if there was reliable public transportation, because you're talking about women who live in northern BC and on reserves where there isn't a lot of money, where there isn't a lot of people with cars, where a lot of people probably don't even have driver's license, and you know, there's one Greyhound bus that's probably continually having its route slashed because there aren't a lot of people who are going all the way north up the BC coast. So, you know, what are you to do if you have to get to places and if you have to see people in communities several kilometers away? You know, what can you do? Well, you can't ride your bike there. You can't walk there. So you hitchhike, and that's easy prey. That becomes a point where it's easy prey. And, this is where the Ministry of Transportation was supposed to come in, because one of the points on this report about the Highway of Tears was, like, there needs to be better public transportation. So they were going to 80-some-odd communities up and down the coast to try and figure out what the needs were. And I guess there was probably a continuing conversation on the emails about what to do. And, yeah, I don't know what the reason is that they decided to erase the emails, what they thought the email said, whether it was they were talking cold-heartedly about cost and, you know, how do you, you know, talking about a couple of dozen of women who've died over, you know, several years versus how much it would cost to run what would probably be in essence an empty bus, you know, a couple of times a day. If there was just the cold hard math of it they were trying to hide. But I mean, like a lot of cover-ups, it's the hiding that looks uglier than the facts that are probably in that email.
Yeah, and that's and speaking of the transit, because you're right, I think that's one of the key issues. When I lived in Northern Ontario, like everybody hitchhiked along that stretch of 17. Like it was just what was done because the bus stunk so badly. It was just this kind of random stop, and it came, or maybe it didn't come, or something happened, or weather permitting or not permitting, it didn't happen.
The service stunk, not the smell on the bus.
Oh no! Well, and the bus. Well, the bus stunk too. But so I mean, I ended up doing it myself, and there was regular people at regular spots that got a regular ride into town from the same people, like because that is just how it worked there. And I get the impression that this part of BC, because it's so remote, again, it's resource-based towns, just sort of way up, you know, way up north, that there isn't, you know, Greyhound and other companies aren't interested in running a bus. So there's probably an opportunity there at little cost to the BC government to consider running trans up there. And maybe they do. I'm not even actually sure of the trans situation, but I'm sure it stinks. I'm sure it's lousy.
It would probably, yeah.
And they've cut the trains, too. I mean, there used to be trains, and that's their gone. They're long gone.
That would be federal jurisdiction, because there used to be VIA trains that would run along there.
Yeah.
And like all VIA services was slashed in the last government.
And what's left is expensive to take.
Oh, yes. And just to close this out, Christy Clark came out last Friday and said, as of today, all political staff are to save their emails, which is, you know, closing the barn door after the horses ran out. You know, from this day forward, we will not delete our emails. Well, thanks, Christy Clark. I don't think that's going to address
the madly deleted present. Everything before the deadline.
Maybe. I don't know. But there you
have it. You'd hope that, you know, that there's not... nothing to hide, but it sounds that way. But I don't know. Is it possible it was like an overzealous person in the office?
Like,
maybe. But...
like I said, you hope it's nothing to hide. But I just have the feeling that there was probably some sort of political thing where it's like, well, we can't be caught in emails talking like dicks about how much it costs to run a bus against the life of a woman who might get killed hitchhiking. And I think that's probably that simple. Most political scandals are usually something that simple and petty. But we don't know until some nerd somewhere digs up the emails. And there you go.
Rely on the nerds heavily.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go to break, we want to announce the winner of our Election Day contest.
That was the worst trumpet ever, sorry.
We need one of those soundboards for the...
Yeah, we had one on hand on election night, but...
Yeah, okay. speaking of election night, so we do want to announce the winner, and they will be getting some reading material from us.
Should I tell them what the reading material is?
Yes, tell them what the reading material is.
A copy of one of my favorites, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt by Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco. It's a combined graphic novel with... other essays from Chris Hedges, and a copy of The Democracy Project, A History of Crisis and Movement by David Graeber, who is the author of Debt, and I believe it's about Occupy, from my speed reading. Days of Destruction is one of my favorite books. So
Tori Betts, if you're listening, feel free to get in touch with us. You can email myself at adamadonaldson@gmail.com or Scotty Hertz at scottyhertz@bell.net. And let us know, and we will leave the books here at the CFRU station for you to pick up.
Or we'll sort out a way to get to you.
We will sort out a way to get it to you. So
somehow.
We know you're a fan of the show, so please get in touch with us.
We go that extra mile for the fans.
That's right.
For sure.
I was going to make a joke about us having so many, but never mind.
As much as we can, so.
We're going to take a break here and come back with some more talk. You are listening to CFRU, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi, I'm James Gordon, and you are fortunate enough to be listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
If you have a local business, event, or initiative that you would like to promote, CFRU can help you out. Free public service announcements are available to all not-for-profit events and organizations, while for-profits have the option to choose from an ad package that is competitively priced to give you the highest quality ad at the best deals available. A staff member will guide you through the entire process and ensure that you are pleased with the final result before it is put on air. If you are interested in having an ad or PSA run on our station, please contact Andrea at outreach@cfru.ca for more information.
That was Christy Lane Sinclair from her new album, Dark Matter. And that was just in the station, actually, recommended by our wonderful CD guru, Alex. Christy Lane Sinclair
also
is...
also known as the music programmer.
Yeah, the music programmer. I couldn't remember her title for a second. There. You know Alex with his CDs, stacks of them. Christy Lane Sinclair is Toronto-based High Decree singer-songwriter. And she's touring a little bit and had a recent documentary on APTN, which is one of my favorite channels in terms of if you want like
news, good work.
News that's going on that isn't CBC-ish. Definitely check them out. Because, I mean, it's not they don't just cover the Indigenous community. They go all out.
And you do want news that isn't CBC-ish because CBC is becoming kind of CNN-ish in terms of the stuff they do.
It's so true, though. Not to slam the national broadcaster, but there are days. Like, you know, when they start off with 10 minutes of Blue Jays, it's like, okay guys. Nothing against the Blue Jays people. I don't want to get hate mail like the Blimp Brock did about, you know. Anyway, that's another story. But Adam's going, Blimp who? But... anyway, yeah, it's we're going to try and raise the bar here on Open Sources, and yes, rock and roll.
Well, we're not going to raise the bar too far talking about this next topic, but...
Yes, I forgot. completely what the next topic was.
We haven't had much of a chance, obviously, with our own election to talk about what's going on in the United States, where there is the current battle for the White House. The election, actually, is a week from... next Tuesday. This coming Tuesday. From this coming Tuesday, the election.
Oh, the big election. I thought you meant the election.
No. The actual presidential election when the 45th president of the United States will be elected is a year from this coming Tuesday.
We won't be pulling an all-nighter either.
No, we won't be doing that. But
we'll just tell you. You'll know.
Exactly. But so looking at what's happened since on the Democratic side, they had a debate a couple of weeks ago on CNN. It was between Bernie Sanders, obviously, the Vermont independent senator, and Hillary Clinton, former First Lady, former Secretary of State, are the front runners there. But there was also other candidates. Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, both former senators, have since pulled out of the race. On the Republican side, Donald Trump was leading everything, but now it seems he has an interloper in the form of Ben Carson. Ben Carson is now leading Donald Trump in Iowa, which is a key caucus state because it's the first one. And meanwhile, a couple of people have slid out of the race, including Scott Walker, who many thought was going to end up being the nominee due to his bona fides as a union buster in Wisconsin and doing other proto-conservative things.
But he had like 0% support, right? Like I saw one poll said he has zero.
Yeah, at the end he had 0% support.
No one is interested.
But when he got in, in the days before he got in, he was the guy to beat because you know he was going to appeal to the Tea Party outsider types and wanted to see the boom fall on all these liberal hippie things like unions and public spending and you know tax
Bring
cuts
the
for the rich.
Down.
Even though you know. It hasn't worked in Wisconsin too well. His new battle is on universities, state-funded universities, yanking funding for those. But
that was an audible sigh. Sorry.
But yeah, he crashed and burned, which is kind of incredible. And then there was another debate last night. CNBC had a debate with the Republican nominees, which turned into typical for a Republican debate. A referendum on moderators and journalists asking journalisty type questions.
Yeah, that sounds like there was the Ted Cruz in particular attacked the media directly, didn't he? He was like, said something about this isn't a cage match, and then the reporter said, well, you didn't answer the question at all, which of course they hate, but of course we saw lots of that here too. Yeah. I think we're into the new era now, but it's the same thing. Like, you didn't answer the question at all. It seems to be a typical kind of conservative move, and I mean small c. I thought I kind of like Jeb Bush's line to his ex-protege Marco Rubio. The what is this, like the French Work Week or something? It's just one. It almost sounds like a Trumpism.
Yeah.
But Trump, I can't remember. I was reading this. I think it was in the Telegraph that Trump was quiet for almost half an hour.
Yeah,
it's probably the most quiet he's ever been in his life. I don't know. Like, is it possible? It's obviously possible it would happen, but. I think he just stepped back and let them beat it out. And this, I don't know about this Ben Carson guy. Like, it looks like he's on some kind of sedative.
Fox,
like, he's just very, like, mellow yellow. And I don't know if that's just his character or he's just playing it that way. But it's almost like he's meditating when he talks, you know. We must take the path of righteousness.
Vox pointed out that he only talked for, like, cumulatively about 7 minutes last night, which is weird.
Who, Carson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which is weird when you're the front runner, because you kind of want to drive, you know, when you're riding a wave, you want to sort of keep riding it. You don't want to just, you know, assume you're going to keep surfing along perfectly fine. There is an art to it. And he talks for 7 minutes, and... You know, it's hard to say exactly what he stands for, too, because one of the questions that Ted Cruz apparently had a problem with, somebody asked him, you know, how does his math square up? He's wanting to implement a 10% flat tax, which economists have said will leave a $2 trillion hole in the budget, and how will this be filled? And he's like, well, we can raise it to a 15% flat tax. And the moderator's like, okay, that leaves a $1.1 trillion hole in the budget.
Moderator's doing the math on the flyer.
Yeah, well, they probably had it prepared in advance. But, I mean, still, they're talking about, how do you have a math problem? And then, meanwhile, on the campaign trail, you know, they're slugging it out over the fact that he's a six-day Advent and all
this. Oh,
is
he a seventh-day Adventist?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't work Saturday. Mr. President, the bombs are coming. Sorry, I'm chilling.
I'm not sure to what extent, because it's part of this whole Rinema rule, this whole silly thing where it's like Trump talking about how he's a Presbyterian.
Presbyterian?
That's what he says, like anybody cares. To get back to the Bush thing, which I found interesting, the Bush Rubio exchange. First of all, Rubio's in trouble, in case you haven't been keeping up, because he says there's been several attacks, not just by Bush but other people, noting that he has been missing a lot of votes in the Senate lately. Rubio's argument is he hasn't exactly been missing them because he hates the Senate and is not going to be running again for his Florida Senate seat. And a lot of people have been calling for him to step down, because clearly, if you're not going to do your job, why are you still in your job? And then Bush attacked him on this regard last night. Rubio was able to get out of it pretty good, though. I think Rubio's comeback was, well, you didn't, you know, back in 2000, you didn't say to John McCain, well, you've been missing a lot of votes either. And, you know, I mean, so this happens when you're running for president, you're probably not as available.
Back when we were friends, Jeb, because they were chummy there.
Well, I mean, Jeb was Florida governor.
So the kind of thing where when the cameras are off, they're probably just, hey guys.
Well, a lot of people are saying that, you know, this was Jeb's last chance. Jeb might be going down. Jeb might be the next big candidate to get out.
I still doubt that, though. I think people are going to go with what they know. You know what I mean?
I know, but a lot...
The smarter version of... Of the little brother.
Well, he's...
Or is he younger than George?
He's younger.
He's younger, eh?
But he's I wouldn't argue he's much smarter, but he certainly talks better. But
he talk good. I don't know. He does. He's the spiel is better.
But I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody commented that this was a South Carolina GOP operative who said this off the record. I think it was again to Vox, but he says, basically, in Bush's case, his last name is the only thing keeping him in the conversation at this point, is the fact that he's a Bush, because he isn't, like, out there, like...
It's not lighting up and sparkling like some of the others.
Well, no, he isn't a performer, and he said that last night. He's not a performer. He's not making any headway on that point. He's not really breaking any new policy ground. He's not setting, like, the conservative mind alight with all these tremendous policy ideas he has. It's pretty much the same platform Mitt Romney ran on, what John McCain ran on. So, you know, what has he got? As much as Scott Walker... You know, when you said he was at zero, yeah, he did hit bottom at zero. But like I said, before he got into the race, he was considered the golden boy. And I think it may be the same thing we're looking at Bush. I wouldn't be surprised if Bush got out of the race at this point. And I wouldn't be surprised either if it came down between Rubio and Cruz. And because you mentioned Trump not saying much, I think Trump might be getting bored.
He's had enough.
He
could roll around his billions somewhere. Yeah, it could be.
You know, when he's going into Iowa second, and his argument is, you know, Bloomberg.
I'm the best.
Bloomberg always hated me. The Des Moines Register, second-rate newspaper, even though it's the most read newspaper in Iowa.
And maybe the people have probably had enough, too. It's like they had their fix, their fill. It is almost like a reality
show.
Yeah,
and Carson doesn't have the... Carson, there was a famous episode a couple of weeks ago where he talked about somebody coming at him with a knife in had a Popeye's chicken, and he pointed out to, no, the one you want is the guy behind the counter. Don't point your knife at me. You want the guy behind the counter.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, it's, he's a curious fellow.
Yeah. So it makes for an interesting race. And also interesting, too, is Paul Ryan, new speaker of the House in the States. And it sounds like he's reluctant. And it also
super reluctant,
because
yeah.
It sounds like it's chaos down there right now. There's, you know, the battle of the Republican sectors, I guess. The super conservatives like the Scott Walkers, and then the kind of the more moderate types.
The Hell No Caucus.
Kind of like the scene we have up here, although it's not quite as protracted. So well, Paul Ryan sounds like he has a tough job ahead of him. But there's another guy that's just sort of like, I you know, credential-wise, what you got there, son?
Well, Paul Ryan has had absolutely no interest in being speaker. He had the job he wanted. He was on the budget committee. He was chair of the budget committee. That's where his interest was.
Mm.
And the only reason he was sort of – his name was ballied about as speaker was because he was on paper acceptable to both establishment and the Hell No types. Although we'll see how long that lasts, because once you get into the chair of speaker and you have to act like you're going to be conciliatory and reach compromises, the Hell No guys are
– just start beating on him too, right?
Yeah.
We're just going to beat on everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's – you know – It'll be interesting to see what happens, because there was also the development of this deal reached between the White House and Boehner, the outgoing speaker, to keep the government funded till the end of the fiscal year, so there isn't any more of this
shutdown screaming
threat nonsense.
Like, shut her down.
Yeah, countdown to the shutdown and all that kind
over
of thing.
Over pick your battle, Planned Parenthood or whatever the heck else it was.
Well, this time it was Planned Parenthood. But
yikes. And then, of course, Democrats. Pure comedy gold in Bernie Sanders. God, I love that guy. I really do.
Larry David.
David doing it. It was just like, it's so perfect. It's along the lines of you know, Palin and Tina Fey. It's like, let's get that guy. He has to do this. So, yeah, I don't know how far the grumpy socialist is going to go, but I love his shtick, of course. Free tuition, tax the rich. You know, it's like he's the antithesis of Trump.
Yeah, it's a curious question about how far he will go, whether or not he'll win any primaries or any caucuses. I think Hillary Clinton's still the one to beat, and who's going to be the likely nominee, despite, and we haven't talked about it much, but a lot of her issues pertaining to the emails and Benghazi and that kind of thing. Although she came out of the hearing pretty good.
I thought the whole Benghazi thing was over, and that was just like, it's back. What do you mean it's back? Like, I was missing something. I guess I don't follow. I mean, I do follow American politics, but it's like, what? I thought this was over. It's just going to keep beating on it, right?
It's more investigated than Watergate and Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Not altogether, but Benghazi longer than each of those things. And I think people would argue that at least two out of three of those things were resulting in the, you know, deaths of people. Mm-hmm. Were probably, you know, whereas, I mean, Benghazi did result in the death of four people as compared to Pearl Harbor and 9/11. Come on.
But yeah, and the look on her face, they'd like zoomed in on her at one point when she was just doing the, you know, the exasperated, like, oh my God, I can't believe this is still going on. So
11 hours.
That's why. I didn't realize it was that long.
And you have to give it up to her. She did sit there for like 11 hours. There were breaks, of course. It wasn't 11 straight hours.
Can I get a cup of tea? No, I don't know. No, you have to stay here.
Sit there, and, you know, with all these cameras on you, too. And so she couldn't, like, I wouldn't say Hillary Clinton picks her nose, but you can't really like do things mindlessly that you would do if you have to sit in one place for 11 hours. You have to be sort of conscious of your body language and what you're doing, and
you have to be like monk-like.
Yeah,
it's like Zen. Find your place. And is just briefly, is O'Malley still in?
He's still
hanging in there.
Yeah,
I don't know much about the guy, but I know he's still like the holdout of the
Democrats,
the lower percentages.
Yeah, he was the only one of the Democrats other than Bernie and Hillary left. It's funny how we just refer to people by their first name now.
We're all
Justin,
chums.
Bernie, all Hillary. Chums. Yeah. Anyway, to wrap up the show, we found this interesting thing in the Guelph Mercury. It was by a local pastor. He's the pastor of Lakeside Downtown. His name's Graham Singh. And he wrote this op-ed in the Guelph Mercury. And it's sort of an interesting think piece. Scotty's laughing, but I think
a freewheeling think piece.
Yeah,
you know what?
And it does sort of seem like, oh, he's just kind of a killjoy. But there, I think there is something interesting at the heart of it. And I'm just going to read a bit. Where is it here? I am, however, asking, this is pretty into the piece, how would we look at the issue of the most gruesome Halloween decorations from the eyes of, say, a new Syrian refugee family in our midst? Quote, welcome to Guelph. We're so glad you have escaped the genocide of your nation. So here's a human skull to welcome you to our home in the royal city, unquote. And when I read that line, it's like, come to think of it, one of my neighbors puts plastic skulls on his fence posts for Halloween decorations.
Cool.
And yeah, and I had a friend from Georgetown up the other couple of weekends ago. I was like, yeah, check out what he does. I'm like, this is pretty cool, right? And but when the Reverend saying phrases like this, it's like, yeah, you know what? If I came from a country where people were like beheading people and doing all these horrific things, and I had to run for my life across the face of the earth. You know what? Coming around the corner of my townhouse complex and seeing a bunch of skulls on a post might freak me out a little.
Yeah, he's sort of got a point, I guess, in the sensitivity realm. But, I mean, like, isn't it in the leaflet? You know, is like, do they not – it's a long-standing tradition here. And maybe it's subject to change. I don't know. But, you know, I don't think a styrofoam skull on a pike is going to
– No.
Shouldn't really. And he – you know, he is right in the sense his traumatic experiences that people have. But there was a couple of parts I had issue with was, well, he mentions rape masks, and I have no idea what it's just. He just sort of throws it out there, the rape mask. Like, is that based on some horror film, or is he saying people will put masks on and rape people? Like, it was just sort of thrown out there, and I would love some clarification on that. And also, he mentioned just randomly that, oh, there's a known sex offender on our route.
Yeah, that was
there's
a
known
on.
Sex offender. Let me tell you know, a lot of the known sex offenders are in this country are pastors. Nothing against this guy Graham Singh, but
no.
The guy charged in Hamilton last week, sexual assault, Pastor Peter Rigo is his name. Or, you know, there's that pastor that drowned his wife in the bathtub so he could run off with a girlfriend, Philip Grandin. And also everybody's favorite pastor, including Stephen Harper's, Don Meredith, like not exactly a stand-up guy,
right.
Wanted for alleged sexual assault in his office and grooming a 16-year-old girl waiting until she was 18 to have sex with her.
Yeah.
So, should I put on a pastor mask and run around on Halloween?
Yeah.
Oh, Adam just grimaced. But it's true, though. You know, put ghost charged with crime into a browser, you'll get nothing. Put pastor charged, you'll get 25 million hits.
I don't disagree with any of that. And
like I said, nothing against this guy. Personally, I don't know him. But it's like, you add pastor to your name, you're just become some sort of authority. I want more. Tell me about the rape mask. What are you saying there?
Yeah.
Tell me where the sex offender lives. Avoid his house if you have a problem with that. Take care of your children.
And the question is, too, I don't know, having never had to look up the sex offender registry, it's not something like you Google your own name. It's like, I wonder if I'm on the sex offender
registry. Well, they let people in the neighborhood know, don't they, or is that a myth?
I'm pretty sure they're supposed to let people in the neighborhood know. But I'm not sure if they're supposed to let people know the extent of what the crime is, whether it's a crime. Because there are a lot of ways to end up on a sex offender registry, and not just assaulting children.
True.
So I'm wondering, you know.
But I also think
about that too, you know, what are the odds?
But I think we're seeing less ghouls and ghosts now and vampire-like stuff. Like, the one thing you're going to see a bunch of are minions. There's going to be minions everywhere.
Oh, for sure.
There's going to be superheroes everywhere. In fact, I think it was in Alberta. There was some sort of, they were dressing kids up for Halloween as, you know, Mayor Nenshi or something. I mean, no, seriously, there's a great picture of this kid as Mayor Nenshi. And Mayor Nenshi tweeted, he said, you know, sexy Mayor Nenshi costume, bad idea. So he's got a good sense of humor about it for sure. But and Halloween's gone corporate too. I mean, it's like next to Christmas, Halloween is a corporate thing.
$3 billion.
$350 million for pet costumes. Dressing up the dog like a hot dog. $350 million.
Yeah, that's...
To me, I don't know. I might be old-fashioned, but we used to just make costumes out of pretty much crap that was lying around, and that was what you went out with Halloween, but now it's like, you need a Israeli soldier costume or something.
Yeah, it's a huge business. And you know that because there are, like, so many pop-up stores that come up for Halloween, and it's not just... I should talk. I once worked at a Halloween pop-up store.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. That's right. That's your former employer.
But, yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting It's an interesting argument, and I'm glad we talked about it briefly here, but there are people who sort of do take it too far, and I did found a couple of cases. There was a guy in New Jersey that had in his Halloween display a pregnant woman in a wheelchair with the baby erupting out of her stomach.
That's a bit much.
And there was a yard in Paroma, Ohio, that included bodies being hung upside down, one of them skinned, and a guy being impaled on a stick. So you go past his house, it looks like The Walking Dead happened. And
that's a bit beyond a pumpkin, right?
That's a bit pumpkin. Beyond the pumpkin, but yeah, you're right. But it's
interesting. As opposed to beyond the pale, it's beyond the pumpkin.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, that is all for this week's show. You can stay connected to Open Sources at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Visit us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. Leave your comments and questions and requests, because we like to hear that kind of stuff. We're also on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And go to Podbean and the Guelph Politicast channel to hear the latest episode of the show on wherever you decide to listen to fine podcasts. And I have two Guelph Politicasts. One's currently available. Greg Taylor of Guelph Ghost Walk, speaking of Halloween. I did an interview with him the other day, and that's available to listen to right now. And then on the weekend, you will be able to listen to the first full-length interview with new Member of Parliament Lloyd Longfield. And speaking of me, you can connect with me.
I'm looking forward to all this stuff about you. Yeah.
Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca is my blog.
My blog's at Spanderbrook. I've put nothing there lately, but I'm thinking about it, working on it. I got other stuff. Scotty Hertz on Twitter and at Scotty Hertz. Where the hell am I? Facebook, Scotty Hertz. Just put Scotty Hertz in. I usually come up. I think there's a couple of fake me's out there, but my minions, I don't know. So, and happy Halloween, everybody. Enjoy
yes.
it.
Don't be too scary out there. Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me, who is never scary. She'll be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here with more Open Sources next Thursday at 5 p.m. Now, to get you up to date with the news, here is a bit of Al Jazeera, and we will see you next time.